It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. I'm your announcer, Zach Caton, and we are coming to you live on tape from the beautifully appointed Media Center at Visit Salt Lake. Wouldn't you like to record in a studio like this? Maybe you can. Visit www.visitsaltlake.com. Our guest today is a television broadcasting legend in these parts. He's ABC4's Craig Wirth. Craig has pretty much done it all. He's worked as a network correspondent and Emmy Award-winning reporter in New York and Los Angeles. Utah viewers know him from decades in Utah television and his amazing worth-watching reports. We, at Let's Go Eat, think you'll find Craig to be a delight. And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
I don't know. I haven't really had this beard that. I mean, I've had it for a while, but I used to just wear a goatee, but I thought...
I know. That's what I always... That's like that. The famed night that I saw you there, I thought... Wow, you know, I mean, obviously you're the only guy that looks this way, but I know you had the goatee. You know?
Right now, I just, but I decided, let it grow
Ken
and see
Sanders,
what happens.
You know, yeah. You're gonna get that point.
I would. Yeah. Ken, he's yeah.
He's, yeah, he did. I doubt he's shaved in years. I mean, it's not something he trimmed. Obviously,
I'm not sure he's even washed it in years.
No, I know. I mean, it just is.
There are people. There are things living in there that you don't want to know about.
Yeah. I was expecting with Bill it would be very formal, and that I was going to have I have the suit and tie in the car, and that we would start out by
ready to defend yourself,
yeah.
Right?
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Welcome
today's to
guest. As we look at the hospitality, today's guest is a gentleman. No, I expected that with Bill. I knew that. How could it not be?
Yeah, formal guy. That's me. Formal guy. All right. Just anytime you're ready, let us know, Dawson.
We're rolling.
All right.
I think I would be asleep if I had any more.
God. Jimmy, don't pour. Just pour a little tiny taste of that.
You got to finish the one previous.
Okay. The bottle previous or the glass?
Hang on. We'll start this show in just a moment, folks.
Yes.
And, you know, this is going to be on the podcast. You know it is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The formal portion of the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Now, before we get to introducing our guests, I want to just say thank you, all of you, for being, all 10 of you, for listening and watching right now.
Does that include family?
Oh, that's right. There'll be 15 then.
We'll put up our numbers.
The show, we need to thank our sponsor, Beehive Cheese, which again, I have to read off my phone because Dawson yet again has failed to print
again.
Me a new copy.
You're 3 for 3, buddy.
Yeah. Beehive Cheese, in a league of its own, Utah's Beehive Cheese elevates humble cheddar to artisanal greatness. Take my word for it. With spirited flavors that spark conversation. We're going to each take a bite of that cheese and the conversation will just flow. Producing award-winning cheeses that bring friends and family together, Beehive Cheese earned first place at the 2022 American Cheese Society competition and were named makers of the best American cheese in the world at the Cheese Awards 2021. Earning the slow food snail of approval late 2022, Beehive Cheese is also one of only 7 American cheesemakers to be B Corp certified. I could read you what B Corp certified is right now, but I think you should look that up and find out on your own.
Gotta be in it to win it.
Yes. Thank you for being here, and we're gonna introduce our guest now. But I have to do this. See how formal we are here?
It is.
Jimmy, what kind of wine are we having, by the way?
So I understand we like a little lighter style of a white wine. This is a white wine. This is a Chardonnay out of Columbia Valley. And this is by the Brown family, multi-generational family. And I'll hand you this
thank
if you want to take a nose of it. And this is a really just a nice subtle orchard fruit, subtle oak aging to it, nice full body, mm-hmm. and it's going to pair with the mother cheese from Beehive. This is their promontory cheese, and this is their base cheese where they'll then wrap all their other flavors around. But this is to the core. And
shall we do a toast and then get started?
I think we should.
All right. Our guest, well, take a sip first.
Well, I chose this cheese because of a core of a cheese for Beehive. We got a core Utahn right here.
Okay, Craig Worth, ladies and gentlemen. Craig is into his second 50 years of feature reporting.
That's right.
Good Lord.
I know.
First half century included stints as a network correspondent and Emmy award-winning reporter at TV stations in New York and Los Angeles. Of course, Utah viewers know him from decades in Utah television. His great, great stories on, you started on Channel 2, right?
Well, I actually started at Channel 4, then at one point went to Channel 2, back to Channel 4. You know, kind of move around.
Worth watching. If you've never seen any of these, shame on you. Craig, you still do them. How many?
I do one on Monday, a new one, and then they repeat it on Sunday.
Uh-huh. And there is a treasure trove of worth watching videos available on YouTube. If you just go to Worth Watching or just look for that, you'll find them just remarkably informative and gentle and charming.
Oh my gosh.
Reports.
Well, thank you.
So let's just talk about where you started from. I mean, you were in, where were you born? Up in Montana?
Montana, yeah. Great Falls, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to be in television. And I always thought I would be like on a quiz show or something, you know? I mean, I really didn't set the sights that I would try to be the journalist. I just thought television was so fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so I did television.
Were you an only child?
No, my brothers thought I was, but I'm the middle child, you know, that old syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And I just always wanted to talk, to write. It wasn't really a thought of being on TV. It was just the writing of it. It was just creating it. It was the ultimate way to create. So I did television I was a teenager.
You went to journalism school?
I did. Went to journalism. Does it show? Perhaps not. University of Utah undergrad and University of Wisconsin was my graduate. And I always worked in television and radio. And that's what radio is, the fun part. Television is kind of the part that pays.
It's harder to do the television because you have to wait on people. There's a lot more technically going on.
Well, you know, yes and no. I have to say, because I know your radio is phenomenal, I think radio is very hard because you have to project to all the senses. In television, you have the video, you have the audio, you have just the captive audience that's sitting there staring like that at your television. You've been invited into their living room, and that's what they're doing. Now, on radio, they're listening to it while they're working. They're listening to it while they're jogging, or they're doing something, or driving. They have all that other stimulus, and you have to project their whole image. I admire that, those that have done radio. I've done radio, country, western, rock DJ. I've done the other Blast Cast from Fast Act to Racks of Hot Wax and Super Golden, as we're playing what you're saying. And I've done country radio.
I'll bet that was very successful.
I might say that I probably killed rock radio in the screaming areas, the old put it by ear what you want to hear. You know, I probably killed that whole syndrome and my career at the same time.
So you graduate, get a graduate degree from Wisconsin, and then where do you go to work in TV?
Well, I've worked in, right after that, came back to Salt Lake City, and that's when I worked at Channel 2, and then went to New York City. I was very lucky, got a job in New York City working as a reporter, went to the network, went to Los Angeles, worked a great deal of my career in Los Angeles, and then I started commuting. 4 days in LA, 3 days in Salt Lake, and then 4 days in Salt Lake, 3 days in Los Angeles. And I got to know Delta real well. And that was really fascinating because you can do two lives if you live in two cities. Now, I really recommend that. You know, it's great. I've always been single, and that was always probably one of the big reasons. But I found that I had an entirely one life in Los Angeles and one life in Salt Lake City based on just who my friends were, what I did. Huh. And, you know, it's weird. I always wore a suit in Los Angeles. I always dressed informally in Salt Lake. I went to all kinds of sporting events in Salt Lake, and I went to cultural events in Los Angeles. And it just kind of, you know, it was like having two different lives.
What kind of, I've seen pictures of you, or maybe even some video of you, at the Oscars, at the Academy Awards.
Right.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, that's something that was just recently. That's just fascinating. I worked at ABC, and I was, and ABC owns the Olympic cover. Olympic, what am I saying?
The Academy.
Oscar. The Academy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we do have the Olympics on the mind. They are coming back.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That was probably why I'm not doing that anymore. It's like, Craig, here's at the Oscars. Yes, I'm here at the Olympics.
That probably did that.
No. I was really fortunate that I was on the crew of the Oscars. When I say on the crew, on the announcing crew. And I would be on the red carpet, and that's just like madness. It's you know, you see these people in their elegant clothes, their dress and all that stuff. And really, in real life, you're grabbing people. Come here, you know, because if you're working for ABC and NBC gets that star, you know, you're in trouble. So they're starting to walk up and you kind of grab them. And literally.
It's electric. It is. Frenzied.
It is. It's frenzy.
Does anybody stick in your mind from interviewing people on the red carpet?
You know, the people that you would guess would be the truly good people, like Tom Hanks, were the truly good people. Wow. I recall particularly, you know, he just made sure, because I think he saw that if you went back and you missed Tom Hanks, you'd be in trouble, and he didn't want to do that. And he would give an individual interview with each one, going back and forth, and it looked like, wow, this is exclusive. As he did 50 others, 50 other exclusives. So
that's admirable. I mean,
that's the pros. And you could tell each one of the pros, Michael Douglas was that same way, those that really had the staying power, they knew what kept, and they would even say that they knew that it was that person you were talking to in Iowa or Kentucky or wherever they were watching this, that's the person that paid their salary, and they're the pros at that.
You know, as I've thought about your career, particularly since you were on our radio show a few weeks ago, and you do brilliant work.
Oh my gosh!
But it kind of flies under the radar, and I was wondering if you ever wanted to be a big star, and did you ever try to do that or approach that, or did you like being where you are?
I really like being where I am because my whole goal was to be a writer and to produce things, and you kind of had to be on TV in order to do that. I was never wanting to be that big, big star, as it were, and even in the news business, yes, there are those that are the big stars. I think there you spend so much time protecting your image. I wanted to project the image of the people I interviewed. Mm-hmm. And really, to me, a delightful person that would make a story out of would be somebody who had never been on television before, rather than interviewing another quote celebrity, other than at the Oscars or the Olympics.
So when did you get into producing these pieces for Worth Watching? When did you sort of hit upon this? And there's a kind of a format to it that's unique.
I think it's because, and that's very kind of you to say,
Unique is either good or bad.
It's
as I think about it, you know, I just happen to think about that when they go, when Bill says you're unique.
Yeah, your pieces just, are unique.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I think that it became, again, when you have people that haven't been on television and you get into a conversation with them, and that conversation builds a kind of a pace. And I think television is rapid fire too much. And so I think that if you ask what sort of became that style, it was just sort of like we're talking here. We're not going, well, that answer to that question in 20 seconds is this. Then you ask your next question. I think a conversation. So it became a conversation because I was truly interested in everyone I've ever interviewed.
Yeah.
And
you
really,
can, and you can tell that.
Well,
you
know, I appreciate that.
And also, I think something that makes your pieces worth watching, Craig Worth, that's who it is that they are written. You write them. I don't know what the process is. Do you go out and kind of get the interviews and get the footage, and then you think, now how do I write
this? Oh, absolutely.
That would be my thought. Yeah.
Every piece. It's the interview, I think of it as the picture, and I'm writing the picture frame. And the passion is in the interviewee, because I like to think of the one question I like to ask everybody is why? Why do you feel this way? Why do you do this? Why? Because that's the one thing I can't write. I can write how long they've done something. I can write where they've done it, but I can't ever write why they do it. That's the passion.
Craig Worth, why do you do these pieces, and why have you done them for so long?
Because I'm fascinated in what people do. And I'm fascinated by the word passion. Mm-hmm. And it's like a collector. I think of all the collectors, whether they collect art, whether they collect cars, whether they collect, in one case, the world's largest Barbie doll collector that I once interviewed, or somebody that collected nothing but bottle caps.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at that, and I'm not looking even at the collection. I'm looking at, why do they do that?
Why do you do that?
Yeah, why do you do that? And why is that your passion? And that's where you get the real story. I mean,
yeah. Jimmy and I often interview people who open and run restaurants.
Sure.
And my question to every one of those people is, why in God's name do you want to run a restaurant? I just can't fathom that.
What's the and when I hear that word, the passion, then I ask you, what's the most telling one that you have seen? What question, when you've asked that question, what does one just immediately hit your mind?
Brooks at Urban
he
Hill.
He always wanted to have the hospitality aspect of
he was
it.
A, he, when he was a little kid, he said, kid. One of my early Christmas presents was a cash register I could play a restaurant.
Now, you've just answered what would be my second question. How many of them ever said to either one of you, because I want to serve food? It's because they want to serve people, or they want
people
to
extend their culture.
You see, and that is what I think we miss. And that's the great beauty of my job, is that I find out that if somebody wants to be, let's say, a physician, it isn't because they have some fascination with how do you fix some wound or whatever. It's they have a curiosity, or they have some desire, or maybe something that happened as a child. And I bet every restauranter that you've talked to, it was something like that. Mm-hmm. Rather than, like you say, the culture or whatever, rather than, I would love to serve daily specials with potatoes and six of the basic food groups.
Yeah. You know, some of the pieces that you've done over the years, and do you by any chance remember the first one you did that?
Oh, my goodness.
First one you did that you just thought, yep, there it is. That's
oh, you know, I remember the first piece because I wanted to be a hard news reporter. Mm. I mean, I thought that's what you had to be. And so actually I at the University of Wisconsin, I got a degree in urban planning so that I could cover city government and all this kind of stuff. Mm. And then I
kill your soul really quick.
Yeah, and then I covered something about there was a penny shortage, just on what people were missing by not having pennies. Of course, that's so many years ago now. It would be a shortage of $5 bills or something, you know. But it was just, and it was just sort of like what people were missing. And they were talking about that at those time you would buy mints at a restaurant and they would be 2 cents.
I remember those.
And then they would have to give a nickel and the restaurant would say, we don't have 3 cents for you. And they put the mint back, you know.
It's kind of odd to think of.
Yeah, and now that's not.
On the East Coast, two cents for one, a nickel for two.
Yeah, now basically this, I know what's going through your mind is, why did I ask him that question? Because that's really not an answer, but that was my first piece that I did as a feature reporter. And at that point, I think they probably felt, well, that hard news career has been destroyed, and so I think you got to do features. Yeah. But it was a great, great choice. I love it doing those things.
You know, it's as I go through the catalog on YouTube, and not all of the pieces you've done are there.
No, and so many of them were done before we even recorded them because videotape was expensive.
So you recorded over stuff,
and they were done on film, and they're little canisters of film. And also, all the stuff that I did at the networks was proprietary. I mean, the networks would not put their stuff up on YouTube.
But as you go through the YouTube stuff, there's so many wonderful nostalgic pieces. I was just amazed to learn that there was at the Nibley Park Golf Course.
Oh yeah,
used to be a whole amusement park kind of thing. What was it called?
Wanamere Park.
Wanamere Park, yeah,
and it was started. Well, before that, it was Calder's Park. Now, and what it was the end of the trolley line went down 7th East, and they had a giant bicycle track. Bicycle racing was really
velodrome.
Big.
It was a velodrome.
Well, it was outdoors.
It was an outdoor.
Yeah, but the banked, and actually, for those that play golf out there, the fourth hole has still the build of the bank.
Where the bank track was.
Yeah, yeah. And the people would, these incredible races. People would be almost killed. They would be hurt. And
bike racing was huge all over America.
Yeah.
No. Bicycles.
Bicycles. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, like do terrible things to each other's bikes so that they would crash. But it also had a floating opera stage. Isn't that great?
Floating opera
stage. They would do an opera and it would float around and people would stand, well, you look at, that was the entertainment and you dressed up for it. What was fascinating in the middle of summer, they would be in wool suits and these elaborate dresses and things like that.
What year was that, about approximately?
It went up until about 1910, 1915. Mm. Now, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact date, but that's approximately.
But you weren't around then, so you have to go dig up all of this archival footage and photographs.
And we have two amazing resources of photographs. One is the Utah Historical Society, and the other is the Marriott Library Special Collections. And in the early days, by the way, is this cheese for us to eat?
Oh, please, yeah, no.
I mean, I didn't know this was display.
It's not just to look at.
I mean,
right?
I just thought this is, well, it's television.
Please.
Yeah, have you like sprayed this so that it looks elegant at all times?
Yeah, no, please, have a piece of cheese.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that this doesn't go into next show's commercials, too.
Thank you.
Okay, sure.
This is the month-long sponsor, St. Cheese.
That's right. It started as...
Yeah.
better. It's just kind of turned into this. It's aged.
It's aged.
It's aged. Yes.
Let's see, so where were we?
You were talking about Watermere Park.
Oh, yeah, and the archival stuff.
And the archival stuff. But there was a commercial photographer, Shipler Studios, and this person must have shot 100 pieces of film a day, pictures, and there are so many images, wonderful, wonderful images of just daily life in Utah. We were so lucky. Mm. And now I've been lucky that both the special collections at Marriott and the Historical Society has been generous.
And when you walk in, they go, "Hi, Craig." Yeah, they know you.
They know me.
Yes. I mentioned this to you when we spoke before. I just remember from a long time, I don't know how many years ago it was, that you did this report with turkeys up in Ephraim or Manti or somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, the turkeys, there's always going to be something that follows you around. And turkeys have won, but the other is the story. People always will say, "What about the turkeys?" And it was just something that I thought I would do around Thanksgiving. And again, I asked, why does somebody go into turkey farming? And of course, I learned about turkeys. And if you yell at male turkeys, they gobble back to you.
That just every time.
Every time. So it's, it's sort of like you can do the shtick.
It was just wonderful watching Craig yelling at turkeys, and then they'd cut to the turkeys, and they'd go,
you were interviewing the turkey.
Yeah, that's...
That was a pretty good turkey impression, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really good.
Pretty good.
No, and so people remember that, and, sometimes you just do a story that was the turkeys, and I still get one I did 30 years ago. I was watching people pack their plate at all-you-can-eat salad bars. And just watching how they start and they line it in lettuce. And they always go to the far end of the salad bar first because that's the expensive stuff. Because they want you to go to the cheap stuff at the one. And I watch people do it. And they still today, they'll go, "Yeah, I learned how to do this, from you." And I'm thinking, that's my lasting impression on life, that I taught somebody, go to the far end of the salad bar first, put the lettuce around, not on the bottom, but around, because then it makes a bigger bowl.
Craig, you'll appreciate this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you eat your cheese while I tell you this story.
Is good.
My grandparents, who were both deceased, were from Ogden, and there was a place up in Ogden that was like the Chuck-O-Rama, but it was called Andy's Chuck Wagon, I think it was the name of it. And it wasn't an all-you-can-eat, really. It was, you would go one time through.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I said to my grandparents, where would you like to go for your 65th wedding anniversary? I'll take you any restaurant you want to go in Ogden or Salt Lake. You want to go to Andy's. Andy's Chuck Wagon, please. I mean, it's...
Been there a million times.
It's $10 or something for a plate. Go to Andy's. Okay, we'll take you to Andy's. So my ex-wife and I, we take them to Andy's, and first thing my grandfather says, we pick up the plates. He says, "I'm going to show you how to load up your plate."
No.
Yes. "I'm going to show you how to load up your plate." Okay.
He said,
"Now this is the salad. Don't put a lot of salad on your plate because you won't have room for anything else. They want you to load up on the salad."
Good brief. See, that's exactly. Yeah, people are passionate about that.
And then finally, we get our food. We go to the table, and a waitress comes over and said, "Would you like anything to drink? A soda or anything like that?" And my grandfather says, "They charge extra for soda."
So I brought my own.
So I said, "Grandpa, I can buy you and Grandma a soda, please."
Split one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, that's what your stories, your pieces do, is remind us of.
Well, and that is such a delightful story, because you look at what you learned from people. Those are the things you remember. The thing where your parents or somebody would say, "I'm going to show you something here. You'll remember the rest of your life," and you do. Now, it might have been how to open the wing window on a DeSoto. Which, by the way, you don't, you know, probably do, but you would listen intently and you remember that. Well, I'm going to show you here's how to, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff that here's how to. And I say I've never been married, so I've never been able to pass on the here's how to. So
you could pass. I saw that lovely piece you did with your dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving with my late dogs. Yeah.
Yes. That was a lovely, just a sweet, sweet piece of having Thanksgiving with your dogs. And I just, that was so wonderful.
Dogs, that's kind of my passion, are the dogs. I just love animals. I love working with rescue groups. And those two dogs were medical research dogs that...
That you rescued?
You rescued, yeah. That was, they did not have a great life prior to that. So it was
You could tell they enjoyed being with you.
You know, it was Thanksgiving, yeah.
You do a new piece once a week?
I do, on Monday nights.
Monday nights? And you have no plans to stop doing that?
No. Now, whether the station does. but I can...
Channel 4, by the way.
Channel 4. And, you know, they have been great to me because it's been a wonderful way. I realize at my age, I'm probably getting to the twilight of my career. But it's a great way to go out, if indeed this is the twilight of my career, to be doing those stories. They've been so good to me. But it's just kind of a fun way to just go around Utah and see things and do things. The piece I did this week was on Hygieia, Iceland. And you know, again, people called, and they have memories going there.
Now, there was a Hygieia, Iceland. Now, I haven't watched that piece. I saw it, but I saw it on the, but I haven't watched it. There was a company that sold ice.
Hygieia Ice sold ice, yes. Mm-hmm. And on 21st South, 12th East.
Okay.
And they delivered ice, you know, in the ice wagons. And since they were in the ice business, they thought, well, ice skating became big. And so they just kind of flooded the area up there. I mean, who would have ever guessed in Sugar House there would be anything but vacant land? I don't think it's quite that way anymore.
No.
And it was land that they couldn't really sell. I don't think that's true anymore.
No.
I think people will buy land in Sugar House. But they flooded it, made a ice rink, and people by the thousands would skate there and just kind of hang out. One of the gentlemen that we interviewed said it was just like hanging out at the mall.
You found people who remembered it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't that long ago. Then they enclosed it, and in 1985 there was a fire, and that destroyed it. Mm. And I had covered the story of the place that had the fire start. It was the Peerless Laundry, and they made their own power. And apparently one night they made too much.
They made their own
power. Well, they had a generator, you know, and they would feed the power line. I mean, it was legal. It wasn't like that they were, you know, in the basement. It was some nuclear chip or something. But no, they it was all legal. They're gone now, but I suppose they could still sue. So I'm going to be really accurate. But it burned down their generator, and it started, and the Hygieia was next to it, and that was it.
Mm. Well, we have another pop-up ice rink in that Sugar House Mill Creek area now. There's a little ice rink there. Just like you're saying, the kids are coming, the families, it's nice to see them skate again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Outdoor. Mm. Yeah, it's a beautiful little single track rink. It's really,
really
quite something. Yeah, Mill Creek Commons.
Really?
Well, there's something you may gonna go report on.
Yeah, yeah. I don't do the ones that are quite as physical anymore because when in the old days, you know, you'd fall ice skating.
Oof.
No big deal. No big deal. Today it would be.
I'm getting up.
Oh, I don't think I can get up now. I don't think I want to get up now. I just think I'm going to lay here till the ice melts, you know. And maybe this is just it.
I'll lay here till the ice melts.
Yeah.
Craig Worth, Channel 4, watches pieces on Monday. Monday. Monday night.
And then replayed on Sunday?
They're replayed on Sunday.
And please go to YouTube. There's a lot of old reports there that are great. And Craig is, we won't go into it, but also a very busy guy. He teaches at the University of Utah. Also does film work and public relations kind of work for the Episcopal Diocese of Salt Lake.
You got it.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, this is so much fun.
Treat.
And yeah, thank you for lunch here.
Have some more cheese.
Yeah, yeah. One more. Yeah, thank you.
And Jimmy, you have a little splash of news. You want to do that?
A little splash of news. Two short stories here. Music and wine. Here's an interesting study about wine that tells us about different musical pieces altering the taste of fine wine. So researcher Adrian North from Harriet Watt University conducted an experiment in which he compared the effects of both gentle classic music and fast-paced contemporary tunes, reaching a surprising conclusion. The type of music that plays in the room can actually alter the taste of the wine to a considerable extent. In addition, other experiments conducted by North, there have been other studies that have explored the relationship between music and wine. One study found that participants rated the same wine as being more pleasant when paired with classical music than when compared with heavy metal music. Wow. So just that extra sense, just radio and TV that you were referring to earlier. Very interesting story on that. Dr. Dre, here's another story, a little bit more. Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg launched Gin and Juice beverage line.
Oh boy.
Musical and cultural icons Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg kicked off the rollout of Gin and Juice by Dr. Dre and Snoop, the first ready-to-drink product from their new premium spirits company. The canned cocktails are premium gin-based cocktails and named, of course, after Snoop's beloved Grammy-nominated 1994 classic song, Gin and Juice.
Yeah.
And it comes in four flavors, citrus, melon, passion fruit, and apricot. It also has, when I saw that parent advisory explicit content that they had on the album, right on the can.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Launching this spring of 2024. Mm. And that's your splash of news.
Thanks so much, Craig, for being with us. If you like the cheese, you're welcome to take some home if you'd like.
Well, can I take this home?
Yeah, yes, you can. Take that. just always a pleasure to spend some time with you and watch Craig's pieces on YouTube and on Channel 4. They're just terrific. All right, that's about it. Ask us anything. You can go to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. We promise we won't answer. And you can, but you know what? If you would like to just join us for a recording of this show, make a request and we might invite you to come and do that. Thanks again, Dawson, for producing the show, except for the fact that you forget the damn beehive cheese coffee every time. Thanks.
There you go.
Thank you to all of you for watching. Remember Jimmy Santangelo, who is the proprietor of the Wine Academy of Utah.
That's right.
That's wineacademyofutah.com. And I'm Bill Allred, and that's, well, we're out. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo. You can contact Jimmy at www.thewineacademyofutah.com. As for Bill Allred, it might be best to just leave him alone. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow. Our theme music was composed and recorded by Doug Wild. Recording facilities as needed are by the Visit Salt Lake Media Center at www.visitsaltlake.com. The show is a Double Plus production. I'm Zach Caton. I used to want to be a TV news anchorman or maybe a weatherman, but I discovered that if I look directly into a camera, it triggers my fight or flight response. Cause you